This is The Topic is Trek, episode 18 for Friday, April 20th, 2018. If loving you is wrong, I don't want to be Tellarite. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already! Still the sexiest voice in podcasting.
I like the reverb. Just where that comes from, I don't know.
I don't know. No. Yeah. Hello, everyone. I'm Clinton Alvord, one of your hosts for The Topic is Trek. And beaming in to join me, as always, you've already heard their voices in the background there. First of all, we have Mr. Craig Stepp.
Hey, I'm back. Yeah, it's a long transporter. That was the early model.
Wow.
Runs on 2 AA's.
Gonna say I could hear the modem in the background on that one.
And I was about to say that was bought 300 baud.
And on sound effects, Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
How are you doing tonight?
Just wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Let's see. Let me check outside. Is it snowing out? Not quite at the moment, but we'll see. After all, it's only April.
Late April.
So while we were away for a week, we had a special episode that came out. Not one of our regular episodes, but you guys got a chance to do a special interview.
That. Yeah, I was just going to mention that. Our interview with Larry Nemechek, Dr. Trek. Thank you very much, Larry, for your time. It was enjoyable. Hopefully the listeners have had a chance to listen to that. If not, if you're just joining us, this is your first episode, go back, go to the website at thetopicistrek.com and check it out.
Absolutely. And yeah, a lot of good stuff in there. Unfortunately, I was having some audio issues, and so I was not able to join in, but it was fun to just listen to everything that you guys talked about with Larry.
Yes.
Took me next down time. Some memory lanes.
We'll always enjoy talking to him.
Take you down memory alpha?
Yes.
Memory alpha lane.
I go there all the time.
There's our next episode title.
A trip down memory alpha lane. All right, let's write that one down.
We're going to forget.
I know we are. We won't listen to our show, so who knows?
If we go back and listen, we'll remember, but maybe not.
I'll have to put my fingers on the side of your head and go, remember.
Remember what? I feel like a memo pad. All right. It's time to head in for some subspace chatter.
Wait.
You don't need all that subspace chatter.
Charlie, we do. We do need it.
I think I'm up first.
Yeah, so production has begun on season 2 of Discovery, and I figured we'd start off with a couple of shows, a couple of stories about what's happening in the disco world.
Yes, Star Trek Discovery has been framed as a prequel to the original TV series, but there's been at least one conspicuous omission to that story. Christopher Pike, the captain of the USS Enterprise before James Kirk, before he was confined to that black wheelchair and only could go boop, beep,
boop. Everybody's got their own impression of that beep. Boop.
That close.
That was close. Where was I anyway? He won't be missing for much longer, though. CBS has picked veteran actor Anson Mount to play Pike in the second season of the streaming TV series, says Engadget.com, among many other sites. Mount is best known as Cullen from Hell on Wheels. That's wheels.
Wheels? Like Will Wheaton?
Like Cool Whip.
Wheat Thins?
Wheat Thins, yes. But he has also had roles in shows and movies ranging from Marvel's Inhumans. That's the way the Ferengi say it.
Inhumans.
Yes, okay.
Black Bolt. He was Black Bolt in that. To Nonstop. Discovery has had its fair share of critics, as we've heard on our show and on TG Geeks. Oh, wait, we're handing out kudos.
Yeah.
Let's see. But its first season accomplished what CBS was looking for. It drove all access subscriptions to the U.S. Woo-hoo! CBS saw record adoption ahead of and following the premiere. The addition of Pike promises to help with that by giving longtime Trek fans a reason to keep watching. The broadcaster certainly won't depend solely on Discovery going forward, but All Access is young enough that even a casting choice like this could significantly affect its fortunes.
All right. We've talked about this before. We're wondering, well, how long is the Enterprise going to be hanging around in this season two? Is it going to be one episode? Hey, nice to see you guys. And psh, they're off someplace. Right. Or they're going to be hanging around for a while. We don't know. Is it
Pike? He's hanging around like a lost puppy dog.
Yeah.
Actually, I think this is good casting for Pike. He's got the look for sure. And I've seen him. My wife watches Hell on
Wheels. Wait a minute. What do you mean he's got the look? How many? We've got different Pikes.
He's got that kind of chiseled look, you know?
Okay.
The Jeffrey Hunter look, not the wheelchair. He doesn't have the wheelchair.
Not with his face sliding off.
The Velveeta cheese look.
No. No, I mean, but he's got kind of that look. So, but my wife's watched Hell on Wheels, and she likes the guy. And she was like, oh, he'll do good in this.
So, all right.
Looking forward to it.
And speaking of casting news, this story comes to us from IO9. I think it's pronounced Tig, but Tig Notaro is boarding Star Trek Discovery. Honestly, considering the staffing changes the good ship Discovery went through over the course of the first season, yeah, that's putting it mildly, the crew could do with all the hands they could get. But Notaro will be serving the Federation elsewhere in season two. And they've made the announcement that she will be playing the part of Denise Reno, chief engineer aboard the Federation ship Hiawatha, which we obviously did not see in season one of the show. If it's an ongoing appearance, it seems that a few more Federation ships beyond the Discovery and the Enterprise will be playing a part in season two. That is, if the Hiawatha is sticking around for a bit longer than the Shenzo did in season one. And they bring up a good point. I mean, the Discovery needs a chief engineer whose job is to work with warp engines and so forth, because right now Stamets is essentially the chief engineer and they're not using the spore drive anymore.
No, he's outrun his usefulness.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing that this could be a way that somehow she finds her way onto the Discovery, and hopefully it's not because the Hiawatha blows up. You know, it just let's cool it a bit on that. It was just a nice exchange of personnel or something
it's
like that.
It's an amicable parting of the ways. Her and her boss just didn't see eye to eye. Or what do they say in the career world? Is she seeking other opportunities?
Yes. And speaking of seeking other opportunities, we have the opportunity, perhaps, to see an old favorite also in season two.
I thought you were going to start talking about the Mars rover.
We had a new name for a starship, the Opportunity.
Yeah. Spirit and Opportunity.
Yeah, that's the Spirit. Okay.
Anyway. So,
please, get us out of this, Craig.
Didn't we cover this story already once before?
No, it just came out.
Yeah.
Really? I remember.
This is breaking news.
Maybe we were joking about a young Spock and bringing his cellet aboard.
I think we've talked about the young Spock from the animated series, of course.
Right.
Before. So, anyway, yes, it looks like a young Spock will appear in Star Trek Discovery on season two. So, though he may not be appearing quite in the way everybody was hoping.
Yeah, young according is to, really in quotes here.
Yeah. According to Jonathan Frakes, who directed an episode in the first season of Star Trek Discovery, the legendary Spock, everyone's favorite Vulcan, best friend of James T. Kirk, confusing time traveler, in Abrams' truck at least, will make an appearance in the second episode of the upcoming season, which Frakes happens to be directing, and I think he's directing more than one episode this season. Frakes, speaking to El Paso Comic Con, said that it would not be an adult Spock. However, at the time of discovery is a young science officer on board the Enterprise living a peaceful pre-Kirk life, but instead a younger version of the character. This version will appear in flashbacks where he'll appear alongside his younger adopted sister, Discovery protagonist, Michael Burnham. So Spock has been, Spock has been a nebulous figure so far in the series. His presence, a bit of a shadow cast over the series. Despite Burnham being related to the major character, he has yet to appear and is only obliquely referred to in the first season, leading Discovery fans to wonder how long would the dance around the connection.
Well, now we know he served with Pike.
Yes, I mean, well, so unless he's mysteriously not on board because he's off on some special assignment, he's right there on the ship that's right in front of them.
Right.
And we're going to see, it's very odd that we're going to see Pike, yet we're not going to see Spock.
Well, we don't know how long was Pike in charge of the Enterprise? Because Spock, I believe he said that he served with him for 11 years.
Right.
He's on there. I mean, yeah. They just said an article. He's on there.
Well, I made it sound like he wasn't quite. The interesting thing, I was watching the Menagerie the other day, and Pike refers to Majel Barrett's character as number one, but yet Spock was the first officer.
No, Spock, I believe, was just the science officer.
Okay, that's what it was. Okay.
Yeah. Right.
My mistake.
Hey, and also let's keep in mind this other weird connection. If they're not going to show an adult Spock, he must have a problem with Sarek and Michael Burnham.
Why is that?
Well,
his dad's on the other ship that they're looking at.
Yeah, but I mean, the fact that, I mean, we saw the relationship that Spock had with his father. I mean, I don't think they're like rushing, to say hello to
each other.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, it is kind of weird that, oh, my father's over there. There's the ship. We're looking right at it, and I'm not going to go see him unless we have one of those moments where Sarek just walks in the room. I just saw your brother. They don't.
What I'm also trying to figure out is, all right, if we're going to see, let's assume we're seeing, and this is just an assumption, we're seeing Burnham and Spock in the household, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to have any reference to Cybok then at that point?
God, I hope not.
Cybok was off with his friends.
He was still incarcerated during this period.
Oh.
He was just a jovial Vulcan, and that was frowned upon in those days.
He was an older brother, right?
Half-brother.
Was he?
It was hard to tell based on Star Trek V who was actually older.
Yeah, I don't know.
They didn't mention that.
It'd be cool if they mentioned Cybok off with at his grandparents' house.
Yeah.
Sleeping over his friends.
He's gone to live upstate at the farm. Anyway, the tweet here also mentions that's included with the articles that Jonathan Frakes will be directing episode 2 and episode 10. It's interesting to note that because I think that episode 10 was the one that Frakes directed in season 1, but I don't think they'll break the season the same way this time around because they're only getting 13, not 15 episodes. So it seemed odd to come back for just 4 episodes. So assuming they do that kind of break again this time around.
We do have a related article to that. If you want to read through the show notes, we're not going to dig into it deep here today, but it is an article in our show notes. The real reason the Enterprise was different in Discovery.
Hey, I'm going to cover that story later.
Oh, are?
Not one yeah.
Oh, I thought we were skipping over that one.
Oh, we're going to do that one. We're going to skip over those other ones.
We got the budget back.
But let's move on at this point to some interesting news not about casting or people in Discovery, but Discovery in general. And that would be a story that Chuck is going to tell us about.
Oh, I was on the wrong set of bullet items. I thought never mind. That's why I was screwed up about the bullet items. Never mind. All right. Disregard everything I said earlier. That's usually the way it goes anyway. Star Trek Discovery nominated for a Peabody Award. All right. Rock on. The award nominations for Star Trek Discovery keep on coming. And it has been announced for the latest iteration of live action Star Trek has received a Peabody Award nominated. Is that like Sherman and Peabody?
No, not like that at all.
Do we get to go in the Wayback Machine?
No.
Received a Peabody Award nomination in the entertainment category. The award winners in the entertainment category will be revealed later this week on April 19th, which is before you listen to this, people. So you'll find out who won, with the winners attending a gala event at Capriani Station in Sector 7G on Wall Street in Manhattan on May 19th. Quote, so unbelievably proud, unquote, series star Sonequa Martin-Green remarked on Twitter as she and other Star Trek Discovery cast and crew members expressed their excitement about prestigious nomination. I'm trying to see in this picture who's who in this picture.
Well, we have a bunch of cast and we have a bunch of producers, writers.
Wow, Mary Chifo's tall.
Yes.
I didn't realize until I saw her sitting next to a stand. Well, you know, they can do perspective things with the camera to make her look bigger when she's in the brig. Cool. That is excellent news. I can't wait. Let's keep our eyes on the news feeds tomorrow.
Indeed. So as Chuck was alluding to, we had a story that came out about a week or so ago, and it's gone through a couple of different iterations since it first came out. And I'm going to kind of go in reverse order here on this one. So we're going to start off with the story, Enterprise Redesign, a Creative Decision for Star Trek Discovery Not Legally Required as Rumored.
Hmm.
The arrival of Captain Pike's U.S. and this story comes to us from Trek Corps. The arrival of Captain Pike's USS Enterprise in Will You Take My Hand, the finale of Star Trek Discovery's first season, heralded the largest stylistic collision between the 1960s era Star Trek production design and the styling used in the new series, as the Constitution-class ship featured many changes to Matt Jeffries' designed vessel. Fan reaction to the revised Enterprise was broadly mixed, ranging from elated surprise to strong disapproval. As the new look of the starship began to be scrutinized and compared to the original Star Trek model from the cage, the refit Enterprise seen in Star Trek The Motion Picture, and even to the Enterprise NX-01 from Jonathan Archer's era. As you have seen reported over the weekend, and that's the story we'll get to, a now deleted Facebook post from Discovery concept artist John Eaves made mention of some of the design choices made during the time working on the new Enterprise model and subsequent artwork created for the 2019 Star Trek Ships of the Line calendar, which features the new version of the ship.
More Christmas ornaments!
Some of that online conversation included comments indicating that the changes to the ship were legal mandates due to some sort of unspecified copyright issue pertaining to the classic Matt Jeffries design used in the original series, which quickly began to spread in the fan community as the topic began to circulate on social media and discussion groups around the web. CBS was reached out to, and this is CBS's comment, CBS TV Studios does, in fact, have the right to use the USS Enterprise ship design from the past TV series and are not legally required to make changes. The changes in the ship design for Discovery were creative ones made to utilize 2018's visual effects technology. The art that was used for the 2019 calendar is concept art, which was completed long before the visual effects process is completed. Because they're talking about the fact that the Enterprise that we see on the Ships of the Line and the Enterprise we see at the end of the first season of Discovery are slightly different than each other. So the reason this is intriguing is because the story when it first came out, this deleted Facebook post, we have this in the other article, and again, this is all linked over at thetopicistrek.com. The show designer, John Eaves, says back in April of 2007, so this is, again, the deleted stuff. Back in April of 2017, the task of the Enterprise of making an appearance came to be and work was to start right away. Eaves explained, the task started with the guideline that the Enterprise for Discovery had to be 25% different. Otherwise, production would have most likely been used have been able to use the original design for the 60s, but that couldn't happen. So we took Jeffrey's original concept and with great care tried to be as faithful as possible. We had the advantage of a 10-year gap in Trek history to retro the ship a bit with elements that could be removed and replaced somewhere in the time frame of Discovery and the original series. So that statement is interesting in a couple of aspects. If I'm reading this correctly, first of all, he talks about a specific amount. It had to be 25% different, which is pretty darn specific.
Mm-hmm. I know. I thought it was kind of a weird number. Yeah.
Then the second thing he's saying is that they were going into this saying, all right, well, we will kind of do things to the ship that could sort of be undone in that 10-year time frame, but we're already in the time frame that we've seen because we see the Enterprise in the pilot that's used in the menagerie. So you can't undo something because it's already that way. So I think that really more the case of just saying that it was done because you want to upgrade it and bring it in line with the aesthetics of Discovery works. And, you know, so whether or not there was any mandate, because there was also a story floating around and it's people hate this. And I'm sorry, I'm going to be mentioning it, but I'll mention the Midnight Edge video, which mostly debunked as everything that they said in there about the fact that, you know, Bad Robot was involved with such and it had to be different than this. And it couldn't they couldn't use any of the same stuff from that. But it kind of echoes back to that thing about, well, we can't use it exact because we have to make changes to it to get around something legal. And CBS is saying, nope, not the issue. Not a question. Was not the case.
I actually like the design because it kind of has the throwback plus it, well, throwback and also aesthetic or, you know, some style designs from the motion picture. Kind of blends in with both. I think it's cool.
Yeah, I think it works. I think that I can understand people being disappointed that it doesn't look like the TV series Enterprise.
One, yeah.
But I don't think that I've seen renderings that people have done saying, oh, if you light it this way, you could make it look kind of fit in and so forth. But I think they need to have some leeway in here. And I think that what they did to it, in my opinion, is certainly, I mean, you probably had some worst fears of what it could possibly look like.
Yeah. And it comes out looking like the Kelvin. Well, we're not done yet.
And when you saw it, you went, I recognize that.
Yeah.
That clearly, you know, and I can see what's going on here and I understand why it looks like that. And that makes sense given the refit that happens later on. And I get it. And I think that overall, I think that it works. So I don't know whether, you know, the designer was telling a truth that then had to be deleted because the Facebook post is just gone or what the story is, but that's CBS's line on it is that, nope, we have the rights to it. And the changes were done just stylistically.
Yeah. You know what I would have liked to seen as if they took the old classic Enterprise and lit it up like the one you see in the show, you know, where it's a little bit dark, you know, because it almost not looks cartoonish, but it's just very bright, you know, the old one. If they kind of lit it like realistically, like you kind of see in the show and in Discovery, I think it'd have been cool. They could have made it cool by itself, just tweak it out a little bit and that's it. But
well, if you go on, if you search on the web, you'll be able to find somebody who's done exactly that. And I think they even have, you know, animation of that version of the ship flying with the Discovery. So you can look at that. All right, but that's enough of Discovery. Let's cover something about Deep Space Nine.
Deep Space Nine?
Deep Space Nine?
Yes. And it's a good day to be a Star Trek fan because DS9 is having a reunion of sorts. Even more, all the actors will reprise their roles on the Star Trek Online.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the Star Trek cruise for a minute. I was getting all excited.
Close enough.
They might do that there, too. But they're doing this for the upcoming Victory is Life expansion for Star Trek Online. So joining the previously announced actors, Armin Shimerman, Rene Bergeois.
There we go.
Ask for it by name.
Yeah. Nana Visitor, J.G. Hertzler, and are the following. So Alexander Siddig is going to be Dr. Julian Bashir. Andrew Robinson will be Counselor Ilm Garrick. Aaron Eisenberg will be Captain Nog. And, of course, you know he's the first Ferengi to join Starfleet. Mumper Robertson will appear, who appeared as the teenage Jem'Hadar in the landmark episode The Abandoned, will play Elder First Durkan Rex. And so Jeffrey Combs.
Is that supposed to be a Jem'Hadar? Or is that, it was just another character?
Maybe just another character. I'm not sure. Jeffrey Combs will play as Wayun will, and Brunt will.
He's going to be playing Wayun 734,215.
And then Brunt.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out if he was playing somebody else. But anyway, so Jeffrey Combs will be in there. Max Grodinchek will be in there. Chase Masterson and Salome Jens.
So quite the batch of people there.
Craig, yeah. Who plays Odo?
Rene Bourgeois.
Yeah, so that if you're, you know, the more stories I see about Star Trek Online, the more I'm going, I really should get around to playing that. And I think was it you, Craig, that said that you do play that or you have played Star Trek?
I dabble in it. You know, I jump in and mess around, and I started playing around. I my problem is I need to go through the tutorial again because I'm like, whoa, how do I do this? How do I do that? Because you kind of get into circles, and I'm trying to fight off these Klingons. I'm like, what am I doing? I'm not being very effective.
But what am I doing with my life? I'm fighting Klingons.
Yeah. But it's fun to mess around in, and I think it could be fun if you play right. So I've had Geordi LaForge sitting there barking commands to me. Of course, he's like an admiral or something in the game I was playing, and you can hear him, we need you to go to so-and-so and do this, and he's telling you exactly what to do. It's pretty cool.
Good. Yeah. I play Star Trek Timelines, which is a different...
on your phone?
Game. On my tablet.
Okay.
So, all right. And speaking of Deep Space Nine, we have a revelation about one of the actors who was on Deep Space Nine and something else that she wanted to do.
Yes. Nana Visitor says she wanted to be Captain Janeway and explains why she's not on the Orville. Rather lengthy article, but we'll get to the highlights. Nana Visitor, also known as Kira Nerys from Star Trek Deep Space Nine, stopped by the Alpha Quadrant webcast last weekend to join Garrett Wong, Voyager's Harry Kim, Aaron Eisenberg, DS9's Nog, and producer Evil Dick Donato to reminisce about her days on Star Trek and explain why we won't be seeing her on the Orville anytime soon. Asking to double dip as both Kira and Janeway, during Deep Space Nine's run, when Voyager had just gone into production, Visitor heard that Genevieve Bujold. I'll work with that.
Yeah.
I'm not.
Say that name again, Chuck.
I'm not French. That's fair. You and where were you when this was needing some help?
You were right.
Cowering in the back.
Yeah, waiting. I was biding my time.
She'd been cast as Captain Janeway, had quite a few days into shooting while producers scrambled to replace her. Yes, what?
You said had quite a few days.
She was gone. Quite a few days. Well, yes. I thought she must have also had quite a few days into shooting.
No, actually, only a few.
Yeah, and then she
quite
quit.
A few, literally.
While producers scrambled to replace her, Visitor decided that despite exhausting long days already part of her life on DS9, the role was a gem and she wanted it. Quote, "Can you believe I had the nerve? I accosted Rick Berman in the street right in front of Stage 4 at Paramount and said, 'Why not? Why? Why can't I?' Because, you know, they had the mix-up and they fired the person they hired and all that stuff. And I said, 'I can do both.' I don't know what I was thinking." And he was like, he practically patted me on the head, said, "No, we're going to get a whole other actress for that." Oh, bummer. Now, she'd already been in the role of Kira.
Bummer,
Maurice.
Yeah, but can you imagine you have to hold down two full-time jobs? You know, it's not like they were come in for a couple hours and shoot. Well, sometimes I'm sure, but.
And it's very confusing. It's like, how is she the captain here? And she's
got a funny ridge nose.
Well,
here
we've reused actors before, but not in major roles. At least
and not at
I
the
can.
Same time.
Right.
I mean, I don't understand how that would have worked. I think
timey-wimey thing.
Yeah. And she wanted to be Janeway. She didn't want to be, you know, Kira Reese.
Wouldn't have made any sense.
Well, I know.
How would you get from the
saying?
Delta Quadrant to the Alpha Quadrant to the Gamma Quadrant?
I don't know.
Actually,
by way of the Beta Quadrant? Happy, I don't know.
I'm happy it worked out the way it did.
Yeah, yeah. It just, as an actor, you're probably going, hey, all they can say no. I'm going to go for it.
Yeah, you know, we were speaking about the quadrants, and I'm working my way through TOS, and watched Arena, everyone's favorite Gorn episode.
Yes, I was going to say and only, but no, there are other Gorn episodes.
Yeah,
and at the end, Sulu reports, "Captain, we're not where we were. Where we are? Excuse me, we're halfway across the galaxy." I'm like, well, that's going to take another episode to get back. Oh, but no, this has no impact on anything anywhere else.
Nope.
Look what happened to Voyager when they got thrown halfway across the galaxy.
I was going to say, Janeway, you put the pedal to the metal.
You got to wonder if there were little thoughts like that in the TOS stuff that went, say, we left something untidy there. We could build on that. We could build a whole episode on that.
We could do
a whole
series
on that.
It could run for 7 seasons. Brilliant.
I'm not the only one who goes,
genius.
Where's my Bailey show?
Yeah, that's right.
Just listening to Larry Nemechek's Trek Files gets me thinking about this, because he finds little nuggets that were sort of way ahead of their time. Some 30 years or 40 years ahead of their time. They would mention something in a letter, you know, Roddenberry would write to Gene L. Kuhn or somebody, and they're like, well, we saw that manifested in Discovery. Like, wow, there's some really, really far-fetched things that they were thinking before, way, way back then, that got tucked away, and you don't know if it was just coincidence or somebody was reading through some old files and came up with this stuff.
It could be a combination. Or you could have that random idea that Gene had that became Andromeda, you know?
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to jump from Deep Space Nine to the big screen.
Wait. Yes. You didn't read the one part that you kind of teased, why she's not on the Orville.
Oh, that's right.
Why she's
that's
not
right.
on the Orville.
That's a long
let's
story.
Let's see. I got to scroll down and scroll down and scroll down. Let's see. The section is titled Pissed That She's Not on the Orville. Visitor has done voice work for Seth MacFarlane on Family Guy and also appeared on his film Ted 2, which I never got around to see. So it's only natural that the guys asked her if she could expect to see her on the Orville, and she had a sad tale to tell. I'm going to tell you something that I haven't talked about. It's an exclusive, which is really annoying, but it's not good news. When I was making the trip across country, moving from New York to LA, I had to do it in a certain amount of time. And it had to be in a car because I have two old lady dogs and a parrot, and my oldest dog was not going to survive another plane. So I auditioned the week before for the Orville. That Friday, my agent at the time got a call putting me on hold. She never told me. So I finalized plans and started traveling across country thinking I didn't get it. Then she calls and tells me that I got it, and I couldn't. Everything was already in motion, and I wrote Seth a note. I didn't blame my agent at the time, but that's really what happened. They lost me the job, and the fact that it put Seth in a bad position at the last minute. So there's a bad taste in my mouth about losing a great part on the Orville, and you know that's been the last thing with Seth. It just pisses me off because I adore Seth. I don't know. Why couldn't they bring her back in a second season?
I don't know.
Maybe and they
also
will.
I'm also interested that she says, my agent at the time, I don't know what that means.
About her role, she told them, it was a leader of a people who had to get everybody off of her planet because it was going to explode. And she leaves her and stays on it and sends her wife and child off. Okay, so she would have been heroic.
She went down with the planet.
Yes. Oh, well. I've got a feeling that we'll probably end up seeing her at some point.
Yeah, the character's name was Janeway, and she...
Yikes.
Why can't I do both? Why can't I be driving across the country and be in Hollywood on a soundstage at the same time?
I know, right?
All right, so now we're going to jump to the silver screen, and Zach Quinto says Paramount eager for more Star Trek, maybe planning more than one movie? What? This is a story via TrekMovie.com. Star Trek Beyond was released almost 2 years ago, and the status of the next film in Paramount Pictures' venerable Trek film franchise is still uncertain. However, Spock actor Zachary Quinto believes that may change soon. In fact, in a new interview, Quinto indicates that more than one Star Trek movie may be in the works.
With at least three or four scripts each.
Well, this seems to be a different thing than the last thing he was talking about. He goes on to say, quote, there's a lot of energy around more Star Trek movies. Which ones are going to happen? Which ones might happen first? I can't really say. I don't know, honestly. I know that there's a lot of conversations being had about it. I know that there are plans about it to do at least one, if not more, movies.
We need a Thor movie, then a Iron Man movie. No, Hulk should go.
No, wrong franchise. Wrong franchise.
They should be planning. I mean, if they want to make this franchise a success, they need to be strategizing years in advance. This whole thing about we've got some scripts on the table. Well, we're not sure which ones we're going to do and which ones we're going to do first. That's crap.
Right. Well, I think the problem is that Paramount Pictures really hasn't been doing well. I think this article points out that it's been slow to get off the ground, but they want to get it going again because even though Beyond didn't do great at the box office, it was still Paramount's biggest motion picture in 2016. So clearly they want to get this thing going, but I think the problem is they changed, the head of the studio changed and all these other things going on. You've also got, I checked on it again today. We're probably getting a bit closer to this merger again of CBS and Viacom, which owns Paramount. So I think that there's just a lot in motion that's blocking this from happening.
Yeah.
And it's a shame because it's all, behind the scenes fighting and financing and those type of things. But so hopefully Zach is right that there is that there's more than one thing out there and that they're actually going to be producing some of that stuff. So that was a movie that we could hopefully wrap our head around. Another Star Trek movie like Star Trek Beyond, hopefully. And then there's a not Star Trek, Star Trek project that I couldn't wrap my head around. And I'm handing things over to Craig so he can hopefully explain this project.
Okay. Go, Craig. Good luck
with
that.
Don't hold your breath. Actually, I was kind of interested in this, and then I was like, what? Snoop Dogg's involved. Okay.
Read on.
Yeah, it's a Trekkie delight. No idea why so many Star Trek actors thought it would be a great idea, but they did it, or they did. Snoop Dogg seems to be the furthest thing from my mind when I think of sci-fi, and I agree.
Well, he's one of the, I don't know. I'm not sure about that.
Well, space and getting high in the atmosphere is kind of his thing. But he's one of the stars of Unbelievable, a parody film that uses a puppet for James T. Kirk. I've seen the little trailer. It's kind of cute. You can watch the trailer below. The original film score was written and composed by Emmy-winning, Oscar-nominated Gerald Fried, the last living composer of the original Star Trek series. Hmm. Snoop Dogg executive produced the film from writer-director Stephen Fawcett. It also stars Nichelle Nichols, who also co-produced. Angelique Fawcett, also a producer. I think she might be related to him.
Hmm.
Michael Madsen and Robert Davi. Also in the film are Casper Smart, Sam Asagri, and Gilbert Gottfried. Okay.
Yes. Okay. So that tells you something right there.
He's synonymous with Star Trek.
Did I ever tell you that I was going to play Janeway?
Have you ever tried to talk to Tellarite?
Warp Factor 5.
It just doesn't work.
Yeah.
Energy, why are we always beaming down to the planet?
So anyway. A nice staircase. Anyway.
I think we just lost all our listeners.
Yeah, I was going to say, wow. Triple.
You're losing me, too. Yeah. I'm out. No, sorry. I'm not going to list all of the names, but there's like 40 plus Star Trek actors who appear from Garrett Wang all the way to Christopher Doohan.
Wong.
So,
You pronounced it wrong.
Never.
It wasn't Wang, but it should be Wong.
Yeah, Wong, Wang.
Yeah, it's an unbelievable list of people, and you watch this trailer and you go, what am I looking at? There are plant aliens. Captain Kirk is a marionette puppet, and I can't.
I think the word unbelievable is probably more of the reaction he got rather than the name he chose.
But it certainly gets around that whole rule of, you know, that those restrictions on fan films, because I don't know what this has to do with the Star Trek, except you've got a Kirk puppet and a Gorn.
They use nothing of the original property.
Well, there's a Gorn in there as well. So I don't have any.
Look, it's just at least Nane and Visitor made it this one.
That's right.
He's right there.
Okay, well, I think it's on that note, and I want to mention again that all of the stories we talked about, including this unbelievable one, are in the show notes for The Topic is Trek, episode 18, and you can find that over at thetopicistrek.com. We also are including some links in there for stories we just did not have the time to cover, and so you can see the additional stories.
I want the headphones. That's all I'm saying is I want the headphones.
So find out what those headphones are by checking out the link over at thetopicistrek.com.
You went too fast.
All right. Yes. It is now time to head out on our main mission. I just press some random buttons and
where's the warp drive? Just
let that futuristic teletype machine right now.
Futuristic teletype machine.
So we talked on our last episode a bit about the fact that Section 31 is going to be playing a part in...
We don't talk about Section 51. 31.
Yeah, I was going to say 51 we talk about all the time.
Mine's 57.
It's got variety.
Right. Oh, nice.
Oh.
Very ketchup with a kid.
Good animated series reference if nobody else caught that.
So... We thought that we should talk a little bit about Section 31, although it's on the lowdown and the hush-hush, as Craig alluded to. If you're not familiar with Section 31 itself, well, of course, they want it that way. But the story behind Section 31, which was first mentioned in Deep Space Nine, is that in the original Starfleet Charter, in Article 14, Section 31, Section 31 deals with the fact that you should use extraordinary means to protect the Federation in times of extraordinary threat. And so this super secret organization was formed and has been part of Starfleet, the Federation, in the background since there was Starfleet and even the Proto-Federation. Now, my first question here is, how does Section 31 get funded? I mean,
that was my first question too. Where are they getting the money?
They don't need money in this century.
Oh, right, well, they're just doing this out of the goodness of their heart and mankind, so they can
I think the word you're looking for is altruism.
Well, I don't know. Did they have money when the Federation first started, though? When Starfleet first, which is a question I don't have an answer to. I don't know when we first are on, say, the NX-01. Do they use currency?
Bitcoin.
Or yeah,
I think I heard somebody referring to buying something a few times.
They do that all through all the series.
Well, yeah, right? I saw Picard was talking about buying something when he was on Risa, I think, or something.
Well, yeah, and Riker was buying something on Farpoint Station, and it's
the first. Yeah, I'll say yeah, that's right. The first episode, they were looking at cloth bolts and.
Just because
that's what you do.
Riker is a well-known seamstress, I guess. Who knows?
He has a trained a trained hand at scrambling eggs too.
Indeed. So, all right. So let's assume that they don't need money. Now they claim that they don't report to anyone. They don't ask for authorization to do anything. So they essentially have no supervision at all.
That's inviting disaster.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It seems very odd thing, because you can always, I think Archer was talking about, well, what is this threat? You know, because they're talking about, well, you know, an extraordinary threat. We have to take extraordinary measures. And so you read into the section, he goes, well, what's the threat? He goes, hey, we got a ton of them. Pick one. So it's like there's always a threat. So Section 31 can always justify itself to be there.
Kind of like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Exactly.
Again, wrong franchise.
Yes. Remember, the topic is Trek. They also, I think that every member of Section 31 that I recall seeing is human. So another question I have is,
are they all human? Non-humans? Right.
That's a good point.
This sounds like a Sapiens-only club.
They're racist.
Because one of the plot lines in Enterprise was they were trying to take down the Earth First. That's not its name, is it?
Wait a minute. Who's this? There's a picture partway down the page of Chairman Koval, Section 31 operative. He's not human.
Oh, okay.
He's Romulan. Right.
No, all that's right. Yeah, that was the episode where they were on Romulan. I'm trying to.
Is that where Bashir is playing the spy?
Yes.
Well, is he a member of Section 31, or is he the person?
I'm reading the caption. I'm quickly going through the paragraph next to it.
I think he was a double agent.
Oh wait! In mid-2375, Sloan resurfaced and assigned Bashir to diagnose the health of Koval, chairman of the Tal Shiar,
right,
during an upcoming conference on Ramis. There must be something whacked with this caption on this picture.
Right. So I wonder about that, because it seems like an Enterprise that they weren't, you know, behind this whole idea of, you know, just keep Earth for humans type
it
of says, thing.
Bashir learned that Koval was an agent of Section 31 after discovering Starfleet Admiral William Ross's complicity in the scheme.
Oh, well, that spoils that episode.
He was a double agent is what it was. He was thinking it was a double agent.
It's like too late now. Yeah. If you didn't watch the show from 2005 or
1997,
whatever it was.
To now. Yeah, 20 years ago.
I have lots of questions about, I don't know whether we're going to get any answers to this stuff in the new series, but
I doubt it.
You know, I'm also wondering, you have all these people that find out about Section 31, Sisko, Kirk finds out in the Kelvin timeline that there's such a thing as Section 31. Reed, you know, Archer knows that Reed is working for this shadowy figure who turns out to be someone involved with Section 31. So all these people in command who try to do the right thing know that there is this shadowy thing, don't seem to want to do anything. Matter of fact, you have lots of people high up in Starfleet who apparently know about Section 31 and go, they do things we can't do.
Exactly. I think they want them to stay around, not for moral reasons, but because they need them in those times of, if they didn't have a group like that, then the Romulans could go, hey, look what the Federation is doing. That's completely against your principles. I like Odo's quote at the top of the page. It says, interesting, isn't it? The Federation claims to abhor Section 31's tactics, but when they need the dirty work done, they look the other way. It's a tidy little arrangement, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
And the Romulans also had, just like here in the article, Romulans had their own, the Tal Shiar and the Obsidian Order with the Cardassians. This is all kind of shadowy spy network.
Right. So, but you could make the argument that, well, you could have, because those ones people knew about. So you could make the argument, just like you have, the FBI, the CIA, those type of things, that you would have that be handled as a section of Starfleet or some organization associated with the United Federation of Planets. But these just seem to be rogue people that do their own recruiting, don't answer to anyone, use whatever means they want. And it's one of those things that Section 31 is one of those elements that I don't think I could ever see being in the original series.
Well, it was obviously around the original series.
But I'm saying that, yes, it was there around that time, because it's, the way we backfilled this has been there since the founding of Starfleet.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying? It's like in those original series episodes with Kirk, the idea that there was a shadowy, group that was looked the other way by everyone in command positions.
Do you think that was partly a sign of the times, when it was written in the 60s? The writers probably just didn't think like that. We've got a different perspective on society and government today.
Well, yeah, except that around that time, you were in the middle of the Cold War. We had plenty of spying going on.
True.
And you had all sorts of spy planes and that.
But there was also a bigger trust in government until Watergate broke.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true. The dam busted and everybody said, well, if that kind of nonsense is going on, then we can't trust anybody. There's all and conspiracy theories abounded. Not that there weren't conspiracy theories before, obviously, JFK and whatnot. But I think it really came to a head, and just the time we lived in, there were, I'd have to say the writers were probably, if they did come up with it, it probably didn't make it past Gene's desk or someone had to approve that storyline and they went, too dark or too out there for the time.
Well, that's a question, given what Section 31 is. We've had plenty of stories with Section 31. We've touched on some of the Section 31 stories that are in Star Trek, the very series. It's It's appeared in talked about Enterprise, Deep Space Nine, Star Trek Into Darkness.
I don't think it was mentioned in TNG at all, was it?
No, because it was developed in
the latter season
of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, so it would have been late 90s when it was conceived.
Right. But, you know, my question is, when we talk about the optimistic future that Star Trek is supposed to represent, ultimately, does something like Section 31 belong in Star Trek? And I'm not saying, oh, I don't want to see it in Discovery, because the fact is that it already is part of what Star Trek is. But overall, do you feel like Section 31 is something that belongs in Star Trek?
I frankly don't think it adds a whole lot. It's not an underlying theme. It's not carrying any series of storylines. It just seems to appear randomly when it's needed. And maybe that's part of the mystique of what it is, but it doesn't come to mind when you think of any one particular series or the storylines. You know, when you say the Jem'Hadar, you immediately associate that with a whole slew of storyline throughout DS9.
Yeah.
And I don't see that with Section 31. And maybe that's part of the mystique of it, is it just rears its head here and there, and you get bits and pieces because it is a secretive thing. I don't know.
Well, I think it does fit in, especially given what we know about Discovery this last season. Mm-hmm. Because they were not making exactly great decisions based on the way they should have been thinking, you know, because they obviously were doing everything they could to pull everything in their favor, you know, bar none. So I think it makes a sense that the Section 31 would be born out of that.
Well, it's kind of strange as well, because in Discovery in the first season, it seems like all Section 31 apparently was doing was had a couple of guards with visible black Delta shields.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Those were manufacturing defects. Those were not.
Oh, I see.
They used Sharpies.
They were cheap props.
Yeah,
because we had this conversation, I think, last time about, you know, why would you have a specific badge for a secret organization that no one's supposed to know about? Matter of fact, I was watching Into Darkness for this on the Vengeance. No one has a badge. Marcus, he's not wearing a Starfleet uniform and he doesn't have a badge. Which I think is the way it should be for Section 31. You know, you're just kind of. I mean, the thing is, you're not. Are you really even Starfleet? Because you're kind of operating out messes with. I don't know whether we're going to get more answers, you know, as we go along with season two.
I don't think so. I really don't think so. And I in some ways, I hope not. Because if you give away too much of that, you know, secret agency mystique, then what are you left with?
Well, it'll be interesting to see, because I'm intrigued at least to understand more about what they do. I mean, on the surface, it seems pretty obvious. They're like the bulldogs, you know, the attack dogs of the Federation.
Right. And you call them in when they're needed, and then you deny they exist when you don't need them.
Yeah, pretty much. All right. Well, let's wrap up our main mission with secrets signs.
And some more random buttons.
Yeah. Hit that one over there.
Yeah, press that one too. There we go. Not that. No, Dee, don't press all the buttons.
Buttons aren't toys.
Oh, Dee, no. Time for our rapid warp speed round table.
We need some warp noise?
Yeah, sure. Let's go for it. Give it to us.
Transporter, tricorder. Let's try this one.
That works for me.
Yeah.
And
it looks like it's beginning to snow.
And I keep moving forward.
Sorry. So it's time for speed roundtable. Where were we?
Yes, it's time once again, gentlemen, to play a game of shuttle pod or airlock.
Yay.
And this is where we mention a character. I'm going to give you a character, and you're going to tell me whether or not that character deserves a shuttle pod to go off into the sunset or the airlock to go off.
Oh, sorry. Guess the mystery voice.
Stop hitting buttons.
That's not young Spock.
He was much more emotional back then.
Oh, okay. Or, you know, kind of drifting off into space. So, our shuttle pod or airlock character for this time around is Q. So I am going to start with Craig since he's laughing so much.
Well, Q could pull off a good Starfleet uniform, but I'm going to say airlock. He's just too much trouble.
Okay.
Too much tribble.
Too much tribble trouble.
Yeah.
Chuck,
you can't airlock the guy. You can't shuttle pod the guy. You can't do anything to him. He does what the heck he wants. This question is irrelevant.
Well, that is an answer. That is an answer. So I would say, well, I'd like to give him the airlock, but I know that to Chuck's point, what good is that going to do? As far as I know, he doesn't need any. I don't know what he needs. He lives in a void. I don't know what he doesn't live in a jar. That's Odo. But I don't know.
Jar.
So
he lives in the continuum.
Let me. I will give him the Q continuum version of an airlock, because what has he done for us? He's introduced us to the Borg. Thanks so much.
Hey, you know?
That's
hey,
what I
hey,
meant to the, say. That's right.
I get a Christmas card from the Borg every year. Don't knock it.
Don't knock it.
So I say he gets the airlock or the Q continuum airlock, whatever it is.
You're going to put him in the airlock and he's just going to wave his hand like he always does and shing, he's gone.
He's going to come back wearing some fantastic outfit.
I'm sure he will.
Q came along and gave us the Borg like a bad rash, and they never went away.
That's right. That's right.
Where's Q been sleeping?
And he just sits around all judgy, you know, about us. You know, it's like, well, who are you to judge? Oh, yeah, you got the robes. Okay, you can pull that off.
Yeah.
But I want to make sure, you know, don't tell John DeLancey when we see him that I said he should get the airlock.
I'm telling.
In that case, it'll be the lifeboat.
All right. So Q, it's 2-1 for Q to be Q continuum airlocked out there. But what do you guys think out there? If you have an opinion about whether or not Q should get the shuttle pod or the airlock or the Q continuum equivalents thereof, or what else should happen to Q, good or bad, you can get in touch with us. And we're going to mention some of the ways it gets in touch with us in just a moment. But it's about time right now to refill the dilithium chamber to get on out of here. You can find me at comedyforecast.com when I'm not doing the topic is Trek. And Chuck and Craig, you're still doing Technorama?
As far as I know.
And Podcasting for Dummies.
Alrighty. So you can find all those links also at thetopicistrek.com. But for now, hit the theme. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at thetopicistrek. Visit our Facebook page or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek,
don't log in to Red Hat.
Sure. No.
Don't put on the red kilt.
Don't log into Red Hat.
No!
We'll get it right next time.
Don't drink the Red Bull. I don't.